This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. We have a thousand things to talk about. The smart people are up in Bristol. The dogs are sound asleep, and I'm sure Clifford is on walkabout. So you are now up to speed with our social lives, which doesn't last any more than 13 seconds. But we have more important things to talk about, like hoops and football and other stuff. You doing all right, Wes? Seriously, you okay? You gonna make it?
I'm doing fine. It's great to be with you on a Wednesday. A couple of good ball games last night. Two home teams pick up wins. And Pack, I got to tell you, we said Monday it would be a big game, and last night at the Pete delivered, especially for the home team. The Panthers were impressive from the jump, and Duke did rally, but at the same time, holy smokes, was Justin Champagne the goods for Jeff Capel's team last night, huh?
And so was Jalen Johnson. Now, if you stayed up to watch the game, you could not turn it off because this was a street fight. This was one of the – and you knew it. We told you yesterday that Pitt wants to get you in a run and down. Well, they want to punch you in the face. They want to jump all over you. And Duke has had trouble with physical teams. And really, Wes, it didn't take but about 2 minutes into this game and you realized exactly – what Duke was facing, and so did Coach K, right? I mean, he knew right from the get-go that, hey, boys, you better be ready to play because Pitt's going to get right in your grill, and they did. Jumped them 8-0 right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, a double-double in the first half for Champagne. Aldis Toney played great, Xavier Johnson. You know, and that's the thing. If I'm Jeff Capel, I'm encouraged by Pack, is our veteran guys – the guys who've been a part of this program for 2 and 3 years are the ones that just kind of picked it up and crossed the bridge last night. And I do believe Pittsburgh had to win the game to kind of cross that bridge, if you will, and to do it and do it at home and get great ball games from your major contributors, Johnson, Champagne, and Toney, I think speaks highly of the job that Jeff Capel's done building Pitt's program. Now, here's the other thing. Champagne is doing this in a way that, you know, we touched yesterday on just being 6'6 and leading the ACC. And by the way, now leads the ACC in rebounding. But the other thing is this too. Paqui does everything that you would expect somebody that's averaging those number of rebounds around the rim. What he's not doing is he's not a guy that's just jacking up shots to get points. Last night, watching him kind of in the flow of the offense, Pittsburgh plays fast, sometimes too fast maybe, right? But I'm really impressed by the rhythm of his game and just how he goes about his business. He impacts the game in so many different ways for Jeff's team.
Pitt's tough. Pitt is tough. And, you know, the other thing, too, is you come in the lane, you better bring your big boy pants. I'm just telling you now. There's a bunch of grown men inside, and they don't mind it. And that's why I thought it was an intriguing game, because Duke's had trouble with tough, physical teams. They didn't play well against Illinois, didn't play well against Michigan State. Even last week against Virginia Tech, I thought the Hokies were tougher than Duke. So what do you do when you're a young team? You have to grow up. And I thought last night Pitt just basically said, hey, we're going to test your manhood right from the get-go. And like I said, you knew instantly in that game last night, hey, Pitt was going to say, here's where the line's drawn, boys. I dare you. I dare you. And it's 8-0, and K's got to call timeout right from the get-go. And you almost knew that you almost could. I wish I was in the huddle because I wanted to hear that, hey, boys, this is what we've been talking about for a week. These are a bunch of tough dudes, so you better man up tonight. And you know what? Duke did. And that's why if you stayed up and you watched the second half, Pitt jumped out to the 15-point lead. Duke came right back, and Jalen Johnson went off. He was fantastic.
Sure did.
I mean, Champagne was doing his thing. Johnson was doing his thing. And it was just a great basketball game. I mean, Duke got it within two and chances late. But again, it was such a fun game to watch because you had individual performances were out of sight, but you also had the whole team concept of, hey, can Duke come back off the mountain here and rally from 15 down? And they almost pulled it off. But a great win for Pitt. I mean, a tremendous win for them last night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the Panthers find themselves now 4-1 in the league, tied for third with Florida State, both schools 8-2 overall. behind Virginia and, of course, Virginia Tech. Hokies are on the shelf for later tonight, this afternoon, rather, against Boston College. That game got postponed. We now have quarantining and contact tracing in both the men's and women's program at Boston College. So we'll get to that a little bit later in the details of the schedule. Nonetheless, however, Pittsburgh gets a road trip to BC. Now, that probably gets put on the shelf this weekend, just given the announcement yesterday about the contact tracing within the BC program. Duke, by the way, Mark, you mentioned this yesterday, and I kept thinking about that in the early stages of the second half last night, that if Duke didn't win, what would be the complications? Well, one of the complications is you got mad on mad Saturday at the Yum Center. Because Louisville's going to be mad, and Duke is sure going to be mad.
Well, here's what I guarantee you, and you can write it in ink. Guaranteed, one of those really two good teams is going to have a three-game losing streak. And that's why last night was so important for Duke. You know, you had a week, again, to figure this thing out, get everybody healthy. Kate talked about, hey, we finally got everybody under one roof, and we're good to go. And as terrific as Jalen Johnson was last night, in some respects, he was so dominant with the ball and making plays, scoring, passing, rebounding. I mean, he was just tremendous. It didn't seem like Matthew Hurt got into the flow of the game, right? It just seemed like all of a sudden it became the Jalen Johnson show. And that was the one thing I was concerned about with Duke, that Matthew Hurt's been tremendous while Johnson's been out.
Yep.
Now that Johnson's back into the mix and he's such a dynamic playmaker, you know, they're going to have to figure that out. And again, you got a bunch of tough guys with Pitt. And I thought Matthew Hurt, in some respects, even though he scored 13, I think it was his final number, he never really was like that force that we had seen with the Blue Devils. But Johnson was so good, and they had to have him. Because you got a sense when Pitt got it to 15 in the second half on the run, you're like, hey, wait a minute now. Pitt closed the end of the first half, scored 14 straight until Duke made a three. And they basically jumped right out and jumped him from the get-go to go up 50, go up 15. It was like 55-40, something like that, early second half. And that's when Jalen Johnson took over and literally single-handedly got Duke right back in the game. So, but going back to your point with Louisville, hey, Louisville's lost two in a row. Duke's lost two in a row. The Blue Devils in particular, and I know we'll go down schedules later in the show, the Blue Devils got to get some wins. You know, we talked about the fact we just hadn't seen him play. That was a forced choice in December with the COVID stuff. You had the week off with the schedule. You look at their quality wins. Wes, they got three wins in the league, right? They've beaten Notre Dame, BC, and Wake, who are combined 2-16. 2-16 in league play. Where are the W's? Yeah. I mean, hey, we're getting the – hey, February is right around the corner. You know, we're now on the past the halfway point of a season, and if you're a Duke fan, you got to be looking around going, hey, Johnson's great. Matthew Hurt's played well. We're getting some pieces here with some of the other freshmen. This is a young team that's going to have to grow up in a hurry. But where are the quality W's? You normally never say that about a Duke basketball team this late into January.
Yeah, I think the Saturday certainly has high stakes. I mean, just from a sheer momentum standpoint, as you said earlier, somebody's going to lose three in a row. Hurt took 13 shots last night to get 13 points. That would be a slight concern. You know, how he and Jalen Johnson probably simply, Pack, in all honesty, how much have they been on the floor together?
Right? Seldom. Seldom.
I mean, they're going to they got to sort that out. That's got to be sorted out. I mean, you know, there's an issue there. Like, you got two of those guys that are capable of going and getting 20 to 25 for you.
Yep.
You got to sort that out a little bit. And the only way you're going to do it is, and that's the thing, too, and we'll go to Coach K here in a minute. You can do all you want in practice, but you got to get it figured out on the floor. And here's Coach K last night after the ball game about the team's slow start.
There should be no panic buttons on young people who have a chance to play at this level of college basketball. You know, if there was a panic button, it would be for 73-year-old people who have coached for 46 years. And I don't have one. So, no, we just, they got to get tougher. You know, we don't have, this is such a young team. It's such a young team, and it's as young a team as we've had for just a long time, so we can't afford to be down. We have to respond.
100% right. I mean, they are young, but you know what, Coach? Ain't nobody feeling sorry for Duke. You know, this is a weird year for everybody, right? You got to strap it on a play. But Kay's right. I mean, this is a young team, and, you know, they got pushed around, like I said earlier. Illinois, Michigan State, Virginia Tech, and last night they got pushed around early by Pitt, who just basically said, I dare you. And like I said, man, if you're going to play Pitt moving forward, you better be ready to pack your lunch, because the Panthers are no joke. They're playing hard, and Champagne is playing as well as anybody in this league, period. And so, Duke, strap it on tight, boys.
From the floor last night, by the way.
Yeah,
39% from the floor last night from the Blue Devils.
But, you know, Pitt's going to play that way, man. They're tough. I mean, you know, they want to get up and down the floor. Like you said, there's times they're going so rapid fire that you're like, guys, just take a deep breath, man, and enjoy it a little bit. And they're like, no, we're going to push the pace. And, you know, they've got some grown men now that when the ball comes off the rim, they get their hands on it, it's their ball. That was the thing that impressed me. You know, Duke's got to get tougher with the basketball. And, you know, you go up against some guys who are juniors and seniors, it's a big difference as opposed to a bunch of freshmen. So this is going to be an interesting storyline, I think, as we move forward. And that Duke-Louisville game, like I said, somebody's walking out of Louisville with a 3-game losing streak, and that's a pretty good basketball team.
Right.
So we'll see what happens on that front.
Duke-Louisville, by the way, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon, ball game on ESPN, by the way, as well as State Carolina, 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
We hope.
Ahead of Duke and Louisville. That's right. Yeah, that's right. We hope. You're right. Good point. The element facing Pittsburgh, well, Panthers, as we said, go to Boston College. We'll get to the weekend ahead. We've got a couple ball games tonight in the ACC. We had one tabled. We'll talk about that as well. We ran the cut about Coach K talking about don't hit the panic button. He also was not happy with the slow start last night where they fell behind. Here's the reaction to that from Mike Krzyzewski.
The most disappointing thing for me was our start. We have practiced so hard and tried different things. And for me to have to call a timeout after 2 minutes, it is not acceptable. It's just not acceptable. And you're down 10 to nothing or whatever it was. But to me, that was the most disappointing thing.
He knew it was coming. And by the way, it was 8-0. And Duke did respond. I mean, not only did they respond, they actually took the lead.
Yep.
But it was a first half of runs, really, for everybody. But the one that was the most important, I don't think necessarily was the 8-0 run. It was the 14-0 run at the end of the first half that gave Pitt a little breathing room. Right. And then, of course, they kind of jumped them early in the second half. Like I said, they pushed the lead up to 15, but Duke responded. It was just, like I said, if you stayed up to watch the game last night, not only did you have incredible individual performances with Jalen Johnson, who was just, I mean, look at his numbers, 24-15, 7 assists, 4 blocks, and I'm telling you, great passes, leadership, didn't mind taking the big shot, get on my shoulders, I'm going to lead us back. It was great. And Champagne, I mean, goodness gracious, he is a player of the year caliber and has just gone off. It was just a great, great fun basketball game to watch.
Well, speaking of Justin Champagne, he offered a quote up after the ball game that clearly he knew he was on a stage last night against Matthew Hurt. There's no guarantee these teams will play again, obviously, the way the pandemic is rolling through college basketball. So Champagne offered this quote after the ball game. Before the game, I kept saying to myself that I don't think he's better than me, talking about Matthew Hurt. I went there and I kind of proved it. Well, you didn't prove it to us, Justin. We were kind of on that train early, but I would say this. Last night, you clearly went to the front of the line in terms of potential players of the year in the ACC. Now, Pittsburgh, as we said earlier, finds themselves tied for third this morning, along with Florida State. There's no doubt you're going to be on the All-ACC ballot, right, Pac? But player of the year, we got a lot of runway left to determine how that plays out.
True, no question, and same thing with teams. I mean, we're going to see hey, we got accounting tomorrow. You'll see just how much jockeying can happen in a week. But from a player perspective, I tell you what, now Justin Champagne's numbers are as impressive as anybody in this league.
Yep.
And I know he's been out. He said yesterday when he was on with us, hey, he's missed a couple games. That's all he missed. We thought he was going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Thank goodness he was not. And for Jeff Capel and company, thank goodness he's back. But at the rate he's going, scoring, rebounding, leadership, toughness, that Pitt team's fun, man. Again, we've been talking about the fact that they've been hiding underneath the right? They've been laying in the weeds. Nobody's been talking about Pitt. If you watched that game last night, I'm telling you, they are going to be a tough out the way they played. They were excellent.
Final note on the Blue Devils here in this segment. We're going to get to the Orange's big performance last night at home in the Dome. Duke is 1-4 in their last 5 ACC road games.
We haven't played any games. How far back does that go? Last year?
Last season.
I mean, come on. I mean, they've got to play, right? I mean, we got to see Duke play. So they better strap it on tight. Like I said,
Notre Dame there, Coach.
Uh-huh. What was that?
Only win is the win at Notre Dame this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I told you, there are 3 wins in conference player, Notre Dame, Boston College, and Wake. Those 3 teams are 2-16 in the league. Where are the quality wins? Well, they're going to get some opportunities, and it starts this weekend at Louisville.
Saturday.
Yep.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Oh, yeah. All right, so we had Pitt's big win against Duke last night. Pitt looking at that zone and going, oh, yeah, we saw that against Syracuse. We put 64 in the second half. Good. We'll see what that does. That was interesting. We didn't even get into that, but we will. But the other game, which was the first one of the night, took place in the Dome. And Cuse, again, for their next 5 at home. Been a bumpy ride here lately. Got to start taking advantage of it, and I thought they did. Yep. Wes, despite being down 11-2 right out of the gate, you're thinking, yikes, what are we doing here? But Syracuse did what they were supposed to do. They go on a 23-3 run, and it then rearview mirror, and they basically woodshedded the undermanned Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah, and woodshedded would be a kind word. 2 things happened in the game. Kadari Richmond came in the ballgame off the bench for Coach Boeheim, and also – Marek Dolzhai picked up a 2nd foul, and Jesse Edwards provided a little interior support and presence as well. There's Edwards going to the basket for a dunk in the first half. I mean, Pack, sometimes it comes in strange ways, right? And then the bigger story was the shooting of Syracuse and Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard in particular, and that just sparked the Orange to what ultimately was a 26-point win last night at the Dome. And Joe Girard, by the way, was feeling it. And when he's feeling it, the green light is as bright as it's going to get, boy. There you go. Pull up from just beyond the S, Pack.
We've talked about Girard being kind of a missing piece here lately. But you're right. When he's making shots, watch out. Normally it opens up the floodgates for everybody else. And the flip side, Miami couldn't throw it in whatever the nearest lake is up there at Syracuse. We have to ask Macri about that. But when they missed their first 13 threes. And when you go 4 of 25 from beyond the arc and you're already sitting there with so many wounded guys, even though it was good to see Timberlake and McGusty come back in terms of getting some time and so forth. But at the end of the day, Syracuse was too good, and this was exactly what Jim Boeheim needed. I mean, they just needed really kind of an easy win, if there's such a thing anymore in college basketball, given the pandemic and so forth. But again, given the schedule for Syracuse, with 4 of the next 5 at home, now is the time to start making a move and start piling up some wins. But it had to start somewhere, and last night it started against Miami.
Miami shoots 16% from 3.
Just mentioned 4 of 25. That's what that is. Yes, sir.
Yeah. That's the lowest by an Orange opponent since December of 2018 when St. Bonaventure came rolling in from Olean, New York, and shot 15.8%. Yikes.
Well, I mean, listen, you're not going to beat anybody shooting 425. I mean, I don't care if it's Syracuse or Ballerina or whatever you got on the schedule. You're not going to beat anybody going 425. Ballerina. Just telling you. But here again, I'm always looking for good news. Right? Give me the positives. I think the positive side for Miami, yeah, you got woodshedded, and it was not pretty. But getting dudes back for Jim Larrañaga. We have harped on this now for weeks and weeks and weeks since we've made this transition into hoops. They've got to get likes back, but it was just good to get McGusty back, Timberlake back. Mm-hmm. And they've now had 2 years of this where they just have not had healthy bodies. And I said the other day, I thought Jim Larrañaga, as far as coaching goes, has done as good a job as anybody in the league just trying to patch all this together. But sometimes when it gets going sideways, like it did last night, it can get ugly when you're undermanned. And it did. And for Syracuse, after giving up a 64 spot in the second half to Pitt and a loss, another loss to Pitt, they needed this. This is exactly what the Orange needed. Gerard makes shots. Boeheim scores a bunch of points. You got some other guys stepping up, making plays, and giving you some production that you probably didn't expect. So it was really a perfect night for Syracuse. You get the win. You got some confidence. The schedule kind of leans your way with home games coming up. So we'll see where they go here. Right now, though, you'd have to say that Syracuse is a middle-of-the-road ACC team at best. At best. But if they can get on a run, it changes the whole landscape. We'll see where it goes.
Here's the Hall of Famer on his difference makers last night.
When it started out 11-2, when you're coming off a 64-point giveaway in the second half against Pittsburgh, you know we had to change the direction of the game right away, and Kadari did that. Jesse helped. But Joe was the – when Joe plays like that, you know, obviously we're just a different team. I mean, he was just smart. He was getting by people. He was hitting his pull-up. He was hitting, obviously, the three. But he was just playing good basketball. And our defense was really good for a long time tonight. And that's important for us going forward.
Amen. Get the W, Coach. Move on.
Virginia Tech visits the Dome on Saturday at high noon, by the way.
Big, we are reaching the point of the season that if you've gotten off to a little bit of a sluggish, slow start, they're all important now. I mean, you're talking about a season where there's no guarantees that you're going to play your full schedule. You kind of know what's in front of you as far as, hey, are we an NCAA tournament team? Can we make some noise within our league? They're all important. And so, yeah, here come the Hokies feeling good about life. And Mike Young's guys have been out of sight. They don't mind taking it on the road. And so for Syracuse, you hope to build upon shooting the ball well last night, and you got the Hokies coming to your house. Big game. They're all big.
Yep. It was game two of a doubleheader at the Dome because yesterday afternoon, Quentin Hillsman's team was back in action. They beat North Carolina 88-76, thanks in part to a 27-9 run in the fourth quarter. Tiana, big ball game. See the block by Cardoza inside. And the Orange pick up the win on the ladies' side yesterday by a dozen, 88-76. So nice win for Coach Hillsman. And Syracuse there. News on the women's side, the selection committee has announced that it will waive the rule for 500 teams. It also announced that teams who fall short of the 13-game minimum can apply for a waiver between February 8th and February 26th to request eligibility. It's a big deal for women, of course, but imagine if smaller compromises are made also for the men to do that for the tournament. That would be very interesting to see as well. But, Pac, here we go with the NCAA waiver process again, and this time it's for the tournament.
A couple things. Number one, is Kim Mulkey okay with this? Let's make sure she's okay, since this is all about the almighty dollar and the money grab for someone making over $2 million a year. I just want to make sure Kim's okay with that. Number two, after watching teams that were 2-8 go to postseason bowls, at least get invitations, hey, why not have sub-500 teams? I mean, we're in a pandemic, man. Right. This is not an ordinary year. So you just got to do what you got to do. The one word we've talked about for 11 months, 10 months, is flexibility, right? Yeah. I mean, I wish I had a dollar for every time I've heard the word flexibility used on a sports talk show or television show. And so you've got to be flexible. And so, hey, good for the NCAA. Makes sense. You know, you got to do it. You've got to have the tournaments. So you've got to bend over backwards if you have to make it work. And if somebody's sub 500 or they haven't played 13 games and you think they're worthy of being in, go for it. Got no problem with it. This year, problem with it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. All right, so we talked about hoops from yesterday, both the men and the women. NCAA making some news with the dates and times and all that great stuff for the tournament. Now we're talking about tonight. Unfortunately, we got another postponement. That's the nature of the beast in COVID basketball. Get used to it if you haven't already. But we know as of right now, as of 7:35 a.m., that we've got two games in the league tonight, as of this second. So that's what we're going to talk about. And the first one involves down in the ATL, right down the street from you, Wes. We finally get a chance to see Georgia Tech play for the first time in almost 3 weeks. And they're going to take on a Clemson team who we saw barely the last time they played against Virginia, coming off a pause in which it looked like they hadn't seen a basketball in 10 years. So what do you think we get tonight with Clemson and Georgia Tech in Atlanta?
Well, it's interesting because Georgia Tech's only played 3 league games and 9 total. So a group that looked like they were on schedule for the most part, now all of a sudden it's kind of come off schedule, right?
Yep.
So with Georgia Tech, and it was interesting, I had a chance to visit with Josh Passon a little bit last night, and I asked him, we were talking about concerns, and his concern is that, you know, all the differentials we've seen of teams coming off pause. And, you know, he said, had they had to go a couple of weeks, they had to go last weekend at Raleigh, he said, we might have been down as many as 5 scholarship guys. Well, if they were going to be down 5 scholarship guys in Raleigh, then that tells you that they may not be at full tilt here tonight, at least from a preparation standpoint. Clemson, meanwhile, came off the pause, didn't look very good at all Saturday, right?
No.
And now we get to see Georgia Tech kind of go through that process. And realistically, the only one we've seen emerge from the pause
Florida State
at full throat was Florida State, right?
Yep. Maybe nationally, to be honest with you. I mean, Florida State. But Leonard Hamilton found some magic down there in Tallahassee, because most of these teams coming off any kind of delay or, you know, disturbance or pause or whatever you want to, however you want to describe it, have kind of struggled getting back in the flow. That was not the case for Florida State. Matter of fact, they've kind of taken it to another level. So I tonight's kind of an unknown as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what I'm going to get with Georgia Tech. They may look like, you know, they're bouncing the ball off their knee. They may look great for all we know. And for Clemson, surely you're not going to get what you saw Saturday, where they were totally out of sorts. Again, give Virginia a lot of credit because they played so well and shot lights out. But that Clemson team had been very, very impressive. And then, you know, you watch what, you know, Alabama did to Will Wade last night, lighting it up, and Purdue knocked off Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Those are teams that Clemson's already beaten. So you know they're a quality team. You just kind of say, all right, are they back into the flow with practice, into a rhythm? And with Georgia Tech, like I said, I don't know what to expect from the Jackets tonight.
Well, and therein kind of, to me, is how's this game going to get played? Because we know that when Georgia Tech has played well, it's been a guard-forward situation. The most consistent inside player they've had is Moses Wright. And realistically, Josh Pastner, when last seen, we saw Moses Wright and 4 guards on the floor, right? Remember that? Against Wake Forest on a Sunday night? So what do we see tonight against the Clemson team who has no problems playing Amir Sims at the perimeter? P.J. Hall came off. I thought he was a bit of a bright spot in Saturday's loss to Virginia. But if you're Georgia Tech, you got to find guys to guard the perimeter and pay attention to what the inside threat's going to be for Clemson. And Clemson also wants to kind of move it up and down the floor. So do the Jackets. I think it's an entertaining ball game, but I would lean Clemson simply for the fact that they're off the pause and have a game under their belt, albeit a disaster against Virginia. But I think that spoke more to their sedentary life the previous 2 weeks. Georgia Tech's going to have to fight through that regardless of who's available. That's going to be something that I think is vitally important. Plus, does a good start help tonight? Sure it does. Because Georgia Tech and Clemson, you know this, Pac, they play good ball games. I mean, mm-hmm. they play great games in basketball. And it's an important game. Maybe more so for the Tigers than the Jackets at this point, though. You know, coming off the pause, I think the expectation level's got to be down a little bit if you're Josh Pastner. By the way, your friends at BPI like Clemson tonight.
Oh, that's good news. That is excellent news for Josh Pastner. Excellent news for Pastner. But the BPI likes the Tigers. You know, the other thing I will say, again, I always try to find the positive with all this stuff. These are two teams that have played really good basketball. I mean, Georgia Tech, despite the slow start, had a pretty good run. When they were playing consistently, they were on a pretty good run. I mean, they knocked off Kentucky. They knocked off North Carolina. Like, you saw them in terms of getting them down the floor and making shots. Kind of exciting team to play and watch. So, like I said, I have no earthly idea what we're going to see with Georgia Tech. When we get together tomorrow, God willing, and start breaking this game down, if you said, hey, somebody's going to win this game by 20, I'd go, all right, who? You know, I mean, really, it would surprise me in the least what we get tonight. We've seen crazy games with teams coming off pauses, and Clemson's snapshot on Saturday against Virginia is the perfect example. I mean, Clemson had been playing terrific basketball, and it got beat by 35 at home. So I don't know what you're going to get tonight with that game. But, you know, again, we'll roll it out and see what happens tonight at 7 o'clock.
On ACC Network tonight at 7, Jay Alter, Malcolm Huckabee will have Wake Forest, excuse me, in their visit to Chapel Hill to meet Carolina. Tar Heels are heavy favorites. BPI says 85% tonight for Carolina at home. Now, even though they lost the ball game Saturday in Tallahassee, I think we both thought Monday that Carolina played much better, much more complete, and some of it had to do with the return of Anthony Harris into the lineup for Coach Williams, I thought.
Totally agree. Again, I like North Carolina tonight in this game. Wake's going to get somebody. I just don't know if it's going to be North Carolina tonight. But the Deacs are going to get somebody. They've just not been able to put 40 minutes together. But I was really impressed with North Carolina Saturday. I was. I know it was a loss. You want to win that game. But Florida State, we bragged about how well the Noles are playing. And that game with 3 minutes to go could have gone either way. And North Carolina got some production from some guys, made shots. That's been a bugaboo with this team from the get-go. They made a ton of threes. So I'm kind of curious to see if North Carolina builds upon what they accomplished despite the loss over the weekend. But at home, North Carolina certainly favored against Wake Forest. But the Deacs are going to get somebody. Just don't know if it's going to be tonight.
Our crack research staff here at Packer and Durham's come up with tonight's magic number. It is 68. Carolina is 7-0 when holding teams to under that number. Wake is 0-5 when scoring 68 or less.
There you go. Speaking of magic numbers, later in the show, I'm going to tell you about some magic numbers, as in Mega Millions. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Wait a second.
If I won, I would still be here. I'm just going to tell you. Magic numbers last night. Yeah, I know. 3 of 60 last week. Let me just tell you, much better last night. That story's later in the show.
How good were you?
Pretty good. I will just say this. The early stages, you know, Coach K talked about a slow start for Duke. I was exactly the opposite.
You didn't have a slow start.
I was smoking. Okay. Smoking.
Well, we know what that means.
Just telling you. So that's a tease for later in the show. I told you I was still going. Hey, I told you if I hit it, I'd take care of all of you, and I'm still coming back to work. I'm not ready to retire yet. Getting closer.
I understand. By the way, the new show will be called Packer and Durham and Friends.
There's not going to be a new show. Now, there may be a new show in place of this, but we're not changing this up. We're going down with
Packer and Durham and all of Mark's new friends.
No. Listen, this is either going to work or it's going to be a disaster. And we're already at show 303.
Oh, okay.
So we fooled them for 302 shows. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Yeah, we got hoops. Sweet. And we've covered that part of it, but we've got football too. It's always hanging around, right? We can always talk football. Because anybody with a pulse has already come out with their way, 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 way too early Heisman leaders, national champions, All-America teams, best cheerleaders, way, way, way too early marching bands. It's crazy. It's January the 20th. But nevertheless, West Durham.
It's crazy.
It's January 20th. But there are some ACC members from a football perspective that are already catching the eye of others that believe they will be All-Americas coming up this fall.
Chris Lowe, who covers college football for ESPN.com, was able to find some players that don't wear crimson and white to put on the list. Sam Howell, Brian Brzee, Miles Murphy, and Lou Headley. The big Aussie's going to come back and punt it up one more year for Coach Diaz. These all made CeeLo's way too early All-America team pack.
Hey, rightfully so. You know, if I had the time to put together such a esteemed list, I would, but I don't. So I'm going to take Chris's word for it, and I agree with him. All four of those dudes are dudes, and if they stay healthy, I expect huge things from all four of them. I would tell you, I think there are probably a few others in this league that would make that list, but hey, that's just me, and I haven't gotten around to it yet, and I don't plan on it.
Right. No. The one note that has come up in the last 48 hours since the deadline for declaration to the NFL draft is that Clemson is going to return all 11 starters on defense next year.
How about that?
Now, look at this a couple ways. You could say the Tigers are going to be behemoths on that side of the ball. That would be one way, and probably the most popular. The second line, and this is one I thought of last night when looking over some of this, Mark, is how much growth occurred on that side of the ball during the course of this season. We spent so much time talking about the offensive line finding continuity that the defense was also going through a bit of a transformation. Yeah, we saw great plays. All that stuff happened. But this defense went through a transformation as well. And to say all 11 guys are coming back, whoa, now. Now all of a sudden we're starting to talk about things from a couple of years ago when they were locked down good.
People don't want to hear this because Clemson's won six consecutive ACC titles. They've been to six consecutive college football playoffs. We know they've won two national championships. And the list goes on and on and on. But they were really young last year. And you hear coaches drop that line all the time. Well, we got a young football team. Well, we got a young basketball team. Happens all the time. But Clemson really, really was young, especially on the line of scrimmage, on the offensive line and the defensive line. And despite all the success, you know, the defensive line had some issues. I mean, there were some days that, hey, they looked like they were young. But when you really dive into Clemson's too deep, it is almost frightening with what they've got coming back. Yeah, they got all 11 starters back, but it goes even deeper than that as far as dudes that started and played and decided to come back. You know, we never saw guys like Justin Foster, right? Xavier Thomas was always a guy that was always kind of playing from behind. He's coming back. I mean, the list goes on and on. I think there was 21 defensive players started at least one game that are returning for next year, including all 11 starters. I mean, it's almost doesn't seem fair that Brent Venables is going to have that ability to say, guess what? I got all this experience coming back from a team that still won 10 games last year, won an ACC title, went to the college football playoff, and you know what? They're also going to have a chip on their shoulder with the way the Sugar Bowl ended. And you got all that experience back. It's kind of scary what awaits in Death Valley in 21.
Sidebar for our friend Tim Beret, who tweeted yesterday that Dabo Swinney's taking Clemson to the last six college football playoffs with an average of just 5.3 starters returning on defense? And now we're talking about 11?
All of them. They're going to be – and you know what's weird, too, Wes? You know, everybody's done all this way too early, top 25 and all that stuff. You know, Alabama, and rightfully so, it's the same old. It's Alabama, it's Clemson, it's Ohio State.
Right.
But Alabama and Clemson next year, talking about 21, it's interesting what they have returning, because in this day and age of offense and first to 50 and, you know, throwing the ball all over the yard, Alabama and Clemson, defensively, the numbers they're bringing back next year, it's interesting. Yeah. I think the early part, and we got plenty of time to break this down. We're not going to go crazy on you on January 20th. But both of them defensively may be leading the charge as opposed to their offense next year. And I know that sounds crazy, given what you just watched with Bama and you just saw Trevor Lawrence and Etienne leave the room. But defensively, both of those teams could be absolutely filthy, nasty in 21. In this day and age of offense, those two dudes at the top are going to be, I mean, I'm telling you, they got experience and players all over the place.
And both have battleship games right off the boat, don't they?
Yep, Miami, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, right here in my backyard. Pretty big deal.
Ooh, right from the bump.
Yep, sir. No joke.
Well, no question. That's awesome. And when you think about it, Alabama and Clemson, same old song. A lot of people say you're getting tired of the fatigue. Well, the reality is these guys aren't – they're not going anywhere.
No.
They're not going anywhere.
Nope.
And we'll see how that goes. But Clemson brings 11 starters back. Now, that's today. You hope you don't have injury, things like that. But 11 starters coming back on defense for the Tigers, and certainly some new faces on offense as well. But that'll be interesting to see as we move forward.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.